Blog Talk Radio. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Blog Talk Radio with your host, Rachel Wright. Hope everyone is having a great weekend, enjoying some sun that finally came out after a morning of clouds and rain. So we're not on our studio deck today. It threatened rain a little bit earlier, so we decided to come indoors today. A little bit about me for those of you who are new to the show, welcome. And for the repeat listeners, welcome back to another exciting Saturday. A little bit about me. I am a motivational speaker, owner of Rachel Chats, insurance agent, volunteer, philanthropist, and kidney transplant recipient. I'm going to talk a little bit about my diabetic challenge as I recap that every week, what's going on. This week started off calm, didn't have any late appointments or any reschedules, but that quickly ended. We went from 0 to 100 very quickly, even though I didn't feel overwhelmed, but I did feel like I was not going to stay on track. And as a result of that, I made some unhealthy food choices. I actually ended up eating out breakfast, lunch, and dinner for, I'd say, 50% of the week. I did not keep up with my food diary. That just went out the window. When I reviewed it today before the show, I only had one entry for Monday. So the rest of the week, no entry. So that was not a good week. It was actually a bust. You know, I'm not going to get down on myself. I know that it's a process. It's something new that I'm doing. And quite frankly, it's going to take a while for it to become a habit. So what I'm going to do next week, I'm actually going to try something a little different by bringing the food diary with me. What I had been doing in the past is leaving the diary at home and normally having breakfast at home. I didn't record that. So I would wait till I got home in the evening and record the entire day. But, of course, you know what happens. You get home, you get comfortable, you go to sleep, and then the next day you pull out your food diary and you're like, what did I have to eat? I can't remember what I had to eat. So I think I'm going to try stuff a little differently, even though I'm going to be doing more packing of the lunch and trying to incorporate an earlier start time so I can have breakfast at home, pack a lunch to get going, and then, of course, have dinner at home. So I'm going to try bringing the food diary with me, just pack it like I normally do when I'm, you know, packing everything else up to go to a meeting or event. So hopefully that will help. When I looked at my weekly readings for taking the medications and staying on track with that, I was actually doing a better job with that. I did have 2 days, actually, Wednesday and Friday, actually yesterday, that I noticed I waited over an hour. I had conference calls, and when I looked up, it had been an hour since I actually had a meal, and then I took the medicine. And that delay, because the medicine does affect the glucose level, that delay did cause a spike in my glucose level. When I actually went to look at taking the level before lunch, I did notice it was not in the higher range. Let me tell you, not in the higher range, not even close. I think one of the readings was 199, which, you know, is high. And then I think yesterday's reading might have been 202. So definitely that makes a difference in getting an accurate reading when, you know, you look to wait too long into the day. I actually stayed on my schedule when I spoke last week about keeping it within that hour time frame. So making sure that I'm having breakfast between 9 and 10 a.m., lunch between 1 and 2 p.m., and dinner between 5 and 6 p.m. Any snacks that I'm having throughout the day, at that last meal for dinner, I try not to make snacks any later than 7:30, 7:45. I actually worked late on Tuesday because I had a meeting, and this just changed my complete schedule for dinner. I think I was able to have a healthy snack. I like had a half of an apple, and that was just to curb any cravings that I had and, you know, not be forced to, you know, go out and get a bag of chips or a soda, something like that, that I knew was not healthy for me to have. And that day I ended up eating dinner at around, I'd say a little bit before 8. And I would not, of course, suggest that you do this on a regular basis, eating that late at night. Your food does not have a chance to digest, even though you're probably thinking, okay, well, you know, I'm going to have a meal at 8, but, you know, maybe I'm going to be up till like 12 or 1. Your food still does not have time to properly digest. I ate at 8 o'clock. I worked a little bit after that, and I probably didn't look to get into bed until maybe 12:30, but I'd say around 11:15, I started to feel like the food was just not digesting properly, and I ended up having to take a Tums because, and again, Tums is not sponsored. It's a radio show. But I did take a Tums just to get some relief because I just felt very full, very full. I did not eat a lot, but I just felt that my food had not had time to properly digest as it would if I was eating at my normal schedule between 5 and 6 p.m. So definitely don't make that a habit. That was just something that happened on Tuesday that was not preventable. I did send my July glucose readings to my endocrinologist view via email. And normally what happens is I send them via email to her every month while we're waiting for the next quarterly appointment, which is scheduled for the end of next month. Hard to believe that September is already a month away. And what we normally do at that appointment is we'll review everything for the past 3 months and see where we are, how the readings are looking, and then we'll actually discuss that with what we're getting as far as when she does another A1C reading, when she actually looks at maybe changing some of the medications if she needs to. So we review all that information on the day of the appointment, and then we look to start our next quarterly appointment, which will probably be at the end of the year, which will, of course, coincide with my nephrologist appointment that's scheduled for the end of the year. So with that said, I'm going to move on to today's topic, which is very challenging, something that I have dealt with on a personal basis and have talked to other transplant recipients that have dealt with this as well, and that is kidney transplant drugs and the cost. Now, before I get into the actual medications, what I'm taking, let me just give you an idea of the drugs I was on prior to having a kidney transplant, actually when I was on kidney dialysis, the medications that I was prescribed, very limited. I was maybe on 3 or 4 medications. First one was metoprolol tartrate, which is for blood pressure. That was just to regulate that while I was on dialysis. The next thing was a phosphorus binder. Normally, your body actually is able to break that down after you eat. But when you're on dialysis, you need a phosphorus binder such as Fosrenol that you actually take after each meal. Sometimes it may be 3 tablets, sometimes it may be 4 tablets, but that's something that you're consistently taking every day after each meal. Now, let me just stop right there. I struggled with taking this medication. The dietitian, when she comes on, she will actually tell you that I was an offender of this medication. I don't know what it was. I think maybe it was the size of the medication because, you know, it was hard to digest. It was, you know, twice the size of like a Tylenol capsule. And it wasn't even a capsule form. So I struggled to take that. I think the reason why I struggled is because I never could remember. You know, I was either out and about and I was like, oh, did I bring the medication? I don't know if I brought it. And of course, you know, you don't turn around to go get it. You just keep going and doing what you're doing. So I initially struggled to take this medication, she will tell you. And I did finally work out a system where I would just pack enough medication as a just in case. So, you know, if I went out for the day and I knew, hey, I'm probably not going to be back until the end of the evening, or if I was going on a trip, was I going to need some extra medicine? So I did make sure that I did that, and that seemed to actually curtail the no medicine taking for the Fosrenol. So that worked out pretty well. I was also on baby aspirin. That's pretty self-explanatory. I was not on any vitamins like vitamin B, vitamin E, any folic acid that's sometimes prescribed for kidney dialysis patients. I was not using any topical creams for itching or dry skin. Normally, when you're on dialysis, you do have very bad dry skin, very bad itching, either during treatment, sometimes after, you know, you have those issues when you're on dialysis. Now, one thing I did have was dry skin, and what I found and what I actually recommended to the dietitian to recommend to other patients who are having a severe reaction to itching and dry skin was to use Original Formula Body Oil. It's in a light sesame, and it's by Neutrogena. You can either use it after you shower, after you bathe, just while your skin is still damp. And it doesn't leave like a filmy residue. You don't, it's not, you know, a big smell, you know, not at all. It's, you barely can smell the light sesame. So, no, Neutrogena is not sponsoring this radio segment. Let me just say that as a disclaimer. So that is definitely one thing I would recommend, even if you're not on kidney dialysis. Maybe you have a bad case of itching or dry skin, or, you know, maybe some form of eczema. That would be wonderful to use that. Now, when we move from the dialysis to actually medicines that they prescribed you pre-surgery, you're basically still on those dialysis medications until you have the surgery. The only thing that my transplant coordinator told me before I was going to have surgery, before she called me, was to, you know, take that day's medication. And then she just reviewed with me what I was taking, and she was like, okay, when I call you, make sure you take your blood pressure medicine just with a little sip of water. Don't take anything else. You know, don't take your phosphorus. Don't take the baby aspirin. Just take the blood pressure medicine, the metoprolol tartrate, with a little sip of water. And that's just to maintain your blood pressure. You don't want that going out of control. You're already excited when you get that call. So that's just to make sure that everything is under control. So nothing really different pre-surgery from what I was taking on dialysis. Now, when I got to the ER, of course, they just asked me again, what medications are you taking? Did you take anything today? I did tell them, yes, I did, you know, take the metoprolol tartrate. And they didn't start any IVs, didn't give any pre-surgery medication, nothing like that. Now, I know when I finally got down to the OR waiting room, they did start an IV in my arm. The anesthesiologist did come out, explain, you know, anesthesia procedure, how everything goes. You know, they monitor you throughout the transplant surgery. He did say, I will be giving you just a little medication through your IV while you're out here waiting until we're ready for you. That's just going to relax you. It's not going to put you to sleep. And then when you're actually in the OR, he said, you know, I will give you some medication that will relax you and that will put you to sleep during the surgery procedure. He was like, you know, I'll make sure everything is comfortable. I think the only thing that I was concerned about, and I spoke about this before, was, you know, the tubing in the whole mouth area. And when they get back there, sometimes for oxygen, they put it over your complete nose and mouth. So, you know, for me, that's kind of claustrophobic. So I did explain that to him, and he was like, don't worry, I'm going to give you oxygen through your nose. And he was like, I'm not going to put anything over your nose and mouth. So that was very comfortable. I think the anesthesia that they use is probably propofol, P-R-O-P-O-F-O-L, if I'm pronouncing it correctly. After surgery, when you're taken back to ICU again, you're still kind of in the sleepy, I'm awake stage, but it's more a monitoring of your pain level. So I know for me, once I woke up the nurse, you know, ask me, did I have any pain or was I feeling any pain? Of course, at that point, you're not feeling anything. I just remember asking her, could I have some ice? And she's like, no ice. You can't have any water. What you can have is, you know, a cold compress on your head, which, of course, you know, is not the same as ice cubes, but, you know, you just have to deal with it. So the medications that I was prescribed post-surgery is the medications that I went home with and the medications that I'm currently taking. A couple of them have been eliminated. I did have a catheter in after the surgery. That's just to monitor how your kidney is doing. So I was taking Bactrim, that I am no longer taking. Of course, your immunosuppressive drugs that you take, which is Prograf, a 5-milligram tablet and a 1-milligram tablet. At the time when I was in the hospital, I was taking 20 milligrams a day. I am now taking 8 milligrams a day. So you can definitely see how they wean you off that as your kidney transplant extends further out. I am still taking mycophenolate in the hospital. I was taking 500 milligrams 4 times a day. And I am currently taking 250 milligrams, and I'm taking that twice a day. Another medication for the kidney, actually used for other things as well, prednisone. When I was in the hospital, I was on 20 milligrams of prednisone. I'm currently on 5, and actually have been on that stable 5 for the last 2 years since I left the hospital. So that hasn't changed too much from when I left the hospital. I do still take metoprolol tartrate, 100 milligrams twice a day. I do still take a baby aspirin preventative. I do still take, again, acid reflux medication. And, again, that's over-the-counter. Magnesium oxide, also again, over the counter. Two medications that were added since I actually have had the transplant was diabetes medication. Three of them. I actually am on a Novolog Flex Pen, which is insulin, and I take that morning, afternoon, and evening, and then Lantus FlexPen, which is also an insulin. I just take that at night. I take Januvia, which is in pill form, and I just take that every day at 12 noon, normally before I have lunch. So those three have actually been new medications along with the immunosuppressant drugs. I have been lucky enough for the diabetic insulin flex pens to get samples provided by my endocrinologist. I'll talk a little bit more about that when I get into pricing and everything. Test strips, insulin needles, those are running roughly about $10 a month. Medication adjustments that the doctor makes, or when you go to your clinic appointment that they make, of course, that's going to be a new prescription unless you have, you know, some extra medicine that you can either double up on or decrease depending on, you know, what prescription has changed. So initially on, I mean, when I was being seen twice a week when I had the transplant, it seemed like almost every week it was a medication change, you know, to try and kind of tweak everything And I was like, wow, you know, I was on that on Monday, but maybe Friday you'd be on, you know, another dose. So I would say roughly in my situation, medication out-of-pocket costs are probably running, I'd say probably $70 to $80 a month. And that is, I do have major medical insurance. I also do have Maryland Kidney Disease Program. And I'll talk a little bit about that. Major medical and, as I said, Maryland Kidney Disease Program. Major medical, of course, is going to pay a percentage of that. What Maryland Kidney Disease Program does is it actually helps Maryland residents with dialysis, transplant surgery, doctor's appointment, kidney medications, any expenses that are associated with kidney disease, anything associated with kidney disease. So that is very helpful. I would say that is where the bulk of my expenses have been eliminated. I have been lucky enough for the endocrinologist, as I said, to provide me with samples. And when I say samples, I don't mean like one or two. I mean, you know, earlier in the year, she provided me with 9 months worth of insulin samples that is, will cover me until my next appointment. At that time, I will probably look at seeing if Maryland Kidney Disease Program is going to cover some of those insulin medications, and I'll keep you updated on that as well. Medicare does offer extra help with prescriptions that's dependent on eligibility. You do have different avenues that you can look at as a solution to some of the high drug costs. I mean, I have been lucky that I did have major medical insurance and other insurance programs, manufacturer programs in place that helped me with my costs. I mean, anywhere, if you can imagine, I mean, the cost of some of this, $10,000 to $12,000. When I went to a retail pharmacy, I just went there to kind of price out a Novolog FlexPen, what it would be without insurance to get, like, you get a packet. I think the packet is maybe, like, 2 or 3 vials. So I was like, yeah, well, you know, I'm going to do my research, price this out, and, you know, see what's going on. So I had the lady price it out. I was like, you know, I don't want to get it. I just want to price it out. Are you able to price it out for me? So she priced it out. She gave me a printout. And for like a vial of a box, you know, one box with 2 or 3 vials in it, which, you know, I don't know how long that would last you. But, I mean, the cost was like $1,500. I mean, I can't even imagine, you know, hearing that. I mean, I was just doing research, and when I looked at the paper, I had to ask her, and I was like, now, is this for one box? And she was like, yeah, that's for one box. And I was like, and that's without insurance. And she was like, yes, without insurance. So you can imagine how extra help is needed for some of these costs, because they can be astronomical, and you have to keep in mind these are long-term medications. This isn't a medication that you're going to be taking sporadically. This is a medication that you will take for the rest of your life. So I know when you're initially going through kidney transplant, you know, they talk to you about the financial aspect and, you know, give you avenues that you can get assistance, you know, for the transplant. A couple of programs that I know of that I'm going to get information, give information on, that prescription drug assistance for immunosuppressive drugs. One for mycophenolate or CellCept, as you, a lot of people call it, is the Roche Manufacture, that's ROCHE, and they have a patient assistance program. You can go to their website. It's www.rxhope.com. For the progress medication, the manufacturer is Astellas. That's Astellas. And their website is www.astellas.us.com. And for Neoral and Cyclosporin, they offer help. That's manufactured through Novartis, and their website is www.pharma.us.novartis.com. You can also go to, if you're a Maryland resident, MarylandKidneyDiseaseProgram.com. I do unfortunately have their number memorized. It's 410-767-7000. And then another organization that, you know, I can't speak enough about that does a lot of great work is www.kidneyfund.org. Or just give them a call on the helpline. They are a great resource for information and for solutions to the high cost of drugs. And their number is 866-300-2900. I think on a daily basis, you know, people are managing their costs, but you can see that it can be, as I said earlier, very high. I have been very fortunate to have an endocrinologist and to have a support system that, you know, did some of the groundwork for me. And quite honestly, I had to do some of the groundwork for myself, finding out if there were manufacturer assistance programs. The current diabetic medication that I am on, the Januvia, is actually paid through the manufacturer. I don't pay anything. I just call up and tell them I need a refill and, you know, it's sent here. And they have a prescription drug program that they offer assistance to, you know, kidney transplant patients as well. So there are resources out there. Sometimes you just have to get on the internet and, you know, do your research, do your homework, and you will be able to, you know, find a lot of different manufacturers that offer assistance. Another thing I want to mention is manufacturer coupons. I found one on Friday in the, you know, neighborhood mailer. It said, like, $20 off from your next prescription at, you know, your local pharmacy, some of the other retail pharmacies. So that is available as well. So I'm hoping that the information that I provided today regarding the drug costs helped. And, you know, it might not help you if you haven't had a kidney transplant, but it might help you in other areas if you're taking medication for something else, that you might be able to get a manufacturer coupon that will offer some assistance. I have had a great time talking about all this today. Of course, kidney transplant drugs, all that near and dear to me. If you want to hire me to speak at your event, host an event, or partner with you on a business venture, you can contact me on social media. I'm on Facebook at Rachel Wright. You can contact me on Twitter at Rachel Chats, Instagram at Rachel W. Chats, or leave me a message on my website, which is www.rachelchats.com. If you don't want to touch social media, you prefer to just talk one-on-one, that is wonderful. Give me a call at 301-693-7792. again, I want to thank everyone for listening to the show today. It's been my pleasure. I'll be back next Saturday, which is August 11th, 2 p.m. Eastern Standard. You see Candace George. Just give her a big hug and thank her for putting me on the show. She's at Entrepreneurs in Power. You can visit her store online at Imprint Fashions. I'm going to leave a link on my Facebook page if anyone has any suggestions or maybe other areas of kidney transplants they would like to talk to me about. We'll definitely leave that on my Facebook page. Again, I want to say have a great week, everyone, and be right.